What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves. Joining me now tonight is Daniel Sperry. Dan, how are we doing post the United States men's national team actually winning a game?
Yeah, it was good, kind of, but yeah, yay, go USA. It was a lot of fun. I got to sit down with a guy who's really kind of starting to get interested in soccer. It just happened to be like, we do this Taco Tuesday thing with my family every Tuesday night, obviously. And, we had someone from coming in from out of town. It was actually his girlfriend. So he was over, got the night off work specifically to hang out with us. And we sat and watched the soccer game, and I got a chance to talk him through a lot of what was going on, a lot of the roster setup, and kind of explain the situation that U.S. men's national team is in. He kind of gets soccer at a basic level, but he's still trying to really, really understand it and get into it. So that was a really cool moment. As I got to watch the game and, you know, I think it's a learning experience for a lot of fans about what certain players are going to look like going forward. So I thought we got a lot of good pictures of that tonight, too.
Absolutely, Dan. Listeners, we are coming to you recording just after the United States men's national team defeated Paraguay by a score of 1-0. That was out at, Wade Men's Soccer Park in Cary, North Carolina, outside the Research Triangle area. Bobby Wood gets the goal just before halftime on a PK drawn by Tyler Adams. I'll go through the lineup in case some of you are a little bit rusty. Zach Steffen was in goal. He got the clean sheet. The back line, a four-man back line from goalkeeper right to left, was DeAndre Yedlin, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Matt Miazga, Jorge Villafana. They were in a 4-1-4-1. In the one spot in the midfield was Will Trapp, who was wearing the armband. The midfield line of four from right to left was Darlington Nagbe, Marky Delgado, and Tyler Adams, who were absolute bosses. Kenny Saif, or Safe, he's been kind of wishy-washy about what pronunciation he prefers, making his debut. Bobby Wood, of course, the goal scorer up top. Notable substitutions off the bench in this one. Two debutants, Timothy Way of Paris Saint-Germain, and Andrijaj Novakovic as well. We're making this game. So let's get started just with the lineup and the style of play before we get into what actually happened and what we think the results mean going forward. Your thoughts on the lineup and how some of the – what individuals stood out to you, Dan?
There's a new – the lineup I actually didn't think was terrible. The only thing that I had a problem with was that Bobby Wood was up top alone. That's not really his best position. I know I'm not the only one to point that out, and much more publicized people than me, such as Matt Doyle and stuff like that, has said that as well. He's not best played by himself. And especially when you don't put a number 10 under him, you're asking him to be the sole central creative force in the final third, not only in hold up play, but in passing and making the link up plays and doing that. That's not really his game. His game is to isolate and kind of slink off of the movement and play to the back shoulder kind of a thing of the defender, then get in behind and try and make that finish. That's always kind of been his MO, and then to mess things up on set pieces. So playing him up top as a single creative force in that 4-1-4-1, however you want to call it, to me it looked more like a 4-3-3, because the two attackers were with the attackers very far wide, but more advanced, just because of the fullback movement from Yedlin and Villafana. But overall, you know, I like outside. Move Bobby Wood from the equation. I actually really liked pretty much the performances from everybody. There wasn't really a player on the field that I felt like had a really down moment. I just thought the lack of Bobby Wood's ability to get into the game and into the build-up play from the front three was just a part of the situation that he was stuck in. Kenny Saif was fantastic. Villafana and Yedlin both did really well, picking their times to get forward and also in their recovery down the wing. The center back tandem was solid. Steffen was solid. Will Trapp was great. Boston midfield. I think if there's any three players that truly, truly stood out to me, it was the entire play all night of that midfield three with Tyler Adams and Marky Delgado. And then dual box-to-box mids. And then you had Will Trapp playing as your six holding mid, kind of dictating some of the passes and the movement and the from left to right of the ball, as well as providing cover for that back line when the back, when the fullbacks bomb forward. So overall, I was actually really impressed with, especially with Will Trapp. Will Trapp looked really good. He's been looking really good all season. I think that's a really good thing, for him in this match. I also think Marky Delgado, for me, was probably one of my favorite performances. That pass to Tyler Adams was absolutely amazing. That is a perfect pass, perfectly weighted. Great run from Tyler Adams to recognize that, to push up from the midfield. So really, there was a lot of positives on the field for the U.S. tonight. And I actually thought, like, they kind of took it to them in the first half. And they out Paraguay, had more of the possession in the second half. U.S. still completed more passes than they did. And they had a much higher pass completion percentage than Paraguay did, even though Paraguay saw more of the action with the ball in the second half. So overall, like, I was actually pretty impressed with the performance that this group put out. Much better than what we saw in January. And I also think that it just helped to have a clear tactical idea going forward. And they were going to play through Kenny Saif. They were going to look for the overlaps from the fullbacks. They were going to play from those guys, try and have Bobby Wood get on the end of stuff. And it kind of worked out. You know, they didn't really get a good finished product from the run of play. But the move from Marky Delgado to Adams to create that penalty kick chance for Bobby Wood was absolutely beautiful and a really good job from that midfield. So overall, tactically a good performance from the U.S., aesthetically a pleasing performance. They look positive for the most part and were very solid defensively. So I have to give credit where credit's due. I don't like Sarakan as much. I thought they did really well tonight, and a lot of U.S. fans should take a lot of positives away from what they saw from these guys tonight.
I'm definitely going to favorite and retweet everything you said about what the midfield duo was doing and how they sort of played together. I thought that this was, you know, hands down, you know, granted, we haven't seen that many games for Marky Delgado and Tyler Adams, but I have to say that these were the best. I'd say I've seen Adams be better in a Red Bull shirt, but this is the best I've seen of him in a U.S. men's national team shirt. This is the best I've seen from Marky Delgado in the red, white, and blue, or the red and white for Toronto. So definitely big ups to them. I thought, you know, Will Trapp, you know, was kind of the old man on the field, and I thought he did a very good job organizing things, especially being that shield in front of the back line. I want to give a shout out to Matt Miazga and Cameron Carter-Vickers. I believe their first appearance together with each other, and their first major appearance for the U.S. men's national team in a while. I thought they were excellent. You know, Zach Steffen wasn't really troubled much of the game, but I thought he was cool, calm, and collected in everything that he did. You know, there was that one little scramble on the corner that, you know, was in stoppage time, you know, right at the death that he wasn't able to quite punch out directly because there were too many bodies. But other than that, I thought he was excellent. So I'm going to agree with you, Dan, from an overall standpoint, other than, you know, Bobby Wood, some tactically, some, you know, issues with some of the decisions that he made, not really a wrong note felt on the lineup. I guess my only complaint was somebody on Twitter was saying to me, you know, how could Sarakin in a meaningless friendly not use all six of his subs? So, you know, maybe I probably would have used a halftime sub or used a couple a little bit earlier on in the game maybe. But in terms of the players who are on the field, you know, we got a good run out from Timothy Way, even though I probably would have liked to see him around the 60-minute mark. You know, I think for Novakovic, just given his age and being new to the Federation, that, you know, just getting on the field was, you know, the step one for him. My only real complaint was we didn't get to see Shaq Moore. You know, I mean, you know, you look at some of the other guys, you know, we know what Jorge Villafaña is going to do. We've seen him with the U.S. We've seen him for his club. The same thing for Yedlin or Nagby. Do we really need 90 minutes out of one of those guys when we maybe could have shifted something around tactically just to see Shaq Moore? Because, you know, you were mentioning, Dan, a bunch of, you know, non-as-soccer-literate people probably have never heard of Shaq Moore. I personally have never seen him play in a live game. I've seen highlights of him. I've watched interviews of him, but I've never actually seen him live when his game's actually going on, so I really would like to see him. Other than that, not a whole lot of complaints. Let's get into the actual game of it, Dan. Lots of chances created, but not necessarily a lot of shots for the U.S. men's national team. Only six, I'm counting, on the entire night. Only two in the first half, one of which was the PK goal for Bobby Wood. And then this game, I don't want to say went CONCACAF-y, but Paraguay, given the experimental lineup and having Miguel Almiron and how much we might have known about them, they got really, really chippy, and then I thought the official kind of let it get out of hand. Then the U.S. responded, and then the referee just kind of went all Oprah with, okay, everybody gets a yellow card because I need everybody to take a chill pill on this one.
Yeah, it did get really chippy there at the end. I was kind of surprised that there wasn't someone ended up with the red card. I applaud the referee for one. I thought the goalkeeper, maybe in a competitive match, could have gotten a red for the penalty kick call. Certainly is how clear in Tyler Adams was. I know the touch was away from goal and a little heavy, but you know, that it was a clear attempt to trip him up, denying the obvious goal opportunity. Could have been a straight red in a competitive match, but the referee, you know, recognized it's a friendly. These teams are trying to get a certain product out of this. But I think Paraguay kind of took it too far. There was some cheap tackles, some very dirty play. I won't say dirty play, but, you know, it was just kind of very frustration fouls as Kenny Saif's dancing on a dude in the corner and he just hacks him down as he tries to turn around him. It's just stuff like that. Kind of got out of hand. The game, like you said, got a little CONCACAF-y in a way. And I thought the referee let a lot of stuff go early. And so when it started getting a lot heavy, towards the second half, and there was some a lot serious fouls because players felt like they could get away with it. You know, then it kind of turned into, okay, the tempers flared a bit. But, you know, interesting game overall. I thought Paraguay actually kind of played a bit more defensive, and they were just looking to get, especially in the first half, were just looking to get kind of Almiron on the counter and get it to their playmakers up front and see if they could do something, which – I mean, I don't know. It just didn't seem like a legitimate tactical outlook for them outside of here's how we're going to set up our defensive lines and keep the U.S. from doing anything. I don't think that the U.S. really warrant, like their attacking group didn't really warrant that much defensive attention from Paraguay in that sense. So I think that kind of it's kind of how you end up with all these shots and they're trying to get through. I'm pulling up the stats here just to look at it, but believe a good portion of them ended up getting blocked. They had a lot of stuff, it crosses, attempted shots, stuff like that. Just, there's always a deflection that kind of sends it off the run, stuff like that. So, you know, Paraguay was very staunch in how they were trying to set up, the things that they wanted to do. Yeah, Paraguay had four shots blocked. US only had one block. Six shots total too was kind of interesting. I thought, I also feel like just a little bit of the product of those numbers, had to do with the fact that there was not a whole lot of central creative force for the U.S. as everything was pretty much pushed out wide and their hope was that they could combine and get something in towards the box. They did a good job of keeping stuff on target though. You know, half your shots go on target. That's a good thing, I guess. But I just would like, in the future, I think you saw overall the U.S. attack was missing a number 10 or a true forward that has the ability to do, I don't say everything, but that has the ability to link up play. I think Jozy Altidore in this lineup actually would have been fantastic because he would have dropped into the midfield. He would have sent Kenny Saif in. I know Toronto's got, two games. Especially a Mexican opponent coming up. So, you're looking at, some heavier, you know, they're looking at minutes and, you know, Jozy Altidore should be a fixture going forward up top. I'd be shocked if he wasn't. The U.S. would be ignorant to have not go that way. I know that U.S. is trying to look at all their options. That's essentially what this camp was. Because if they were trying to put out the best team possible, Christian Pulisic would have been there, and I think they would have attempted to get Weston McKennie on the field as well, despite the injury. So not a must-win game. They're allowed to experiment, put Bobby Wood up there. Truly, he's not a complete forward. He doesn't have the hold-up play, doesn't have the playmaking skills that a Jozy Altidore would have, or heck, even Aaron Johansson at this point, considering the form that he'd been in for Werder Bremen. He was looking fantastic in the Bundesliga leading up to this little small injury keeps him out. So, you know, I think they're really the number one thing that I look at when you're looking at the U.S. attack going forward is that they need to find a central attacking force, because I think they have all the pieces outside of it to be somewhat competent. The question is, what do they have centrally that's going to be that creative force for them and help create goals going forward? If they can find that solution and they can get it all looking like this, but have that central attacking solution, I think you're looking at a team that's pretty well built for a 2022 qualification run.
Just some quick stats for you folks. There were 7 yellow cards handed out in this game. No double yellows or anything. Nobody was sent off. 5 of those were to Paraguay, only 2 for the United States. 1 to Cameron Carter-Vickers that for me was a 50-50 ball at best. And then DeAndre Yedlin had the other one. Of those 7 yellow cards given out, 6 of them were given out in the second half. So it definitely got chippier as the game went along. I thought if the official just maybe given out 1 or 2 yellow cards in the first half, that maybe would have quelled things. But I'm going to agree with you about everything that went on tactically, maybe what was missing, and understanding that given the circumstances, you're obviously not going to call on a Christian Pulisic or a Jozy Altidore or anything like that, Dan. The one thing that I will say that was maybe, I don't want to say a cop-out, but a slight advantage to the point of devaluing the exercise of this friendly was, you know, Paraguay obviously also not in the World Cup. They have an experimental lineup. The only real big attacking threat, of course, was Miguel Almirón, that I think, you know, on another night might have been a little bit more of a threat. But, you know, you look at that midfield 5 in the 1-4 of it, you've got 4 guys who play in MLS, all of whom play in the Eastern Conference. Tyler Adams for the New York Red Bulls, Marky Delgado with Toronto FC, Will Trapp, Columbus Crew, and then Darlington Nagbe, who plays for Atlanta, so he gets to see Miguel Almirón every single day in training. So, you know, maybe where previously you'd have, you know, a random different opponent that would provide an exercise for you, the familiarity of knowing Almirón, knowing that the offense is going to flow through him. He had 3 of the 11 shots for Paraguay, you know, maybe made things a little bit easier to the detriment of having the exercise of playing, you know, a South American team, so to speak. But, you know, I think that's, you know, that's 6 of one, half dozen of another. Let's look at the big picture here, Dan. Obviously, still, you know, Carlos Cordero is just now coming into, you know, his ownership of, you know, the I don't know if it's an Oval Office. I don't know if there's an actual title for the office of the U.S. presidency. But in any case, Carlos Cordero is, you know, he's only been on the job, what, less than 2 months now for as U.S. Soccer Federation. There's been some rumblings about looking at a technical director role, a GM role, and then from there having that those brains come together for, you know, picking whoever, you know, the successor to Dave Sarakian and Bruce Arena and why can't I remember his name? Jurgen Klinsmann, excuse me, in that. So obviously, you know, it's going to be a completely different coaching staff. You know, the U.S. doesn't have a competitive game so far going forward. You know, what are you taking out of this game in the long term? You know, was, you know, the 10 minutes that we, you know, the 2 or 3 really good runs that we saw from Timothy Weah, anything to write home about? You know, did 4 years from now, when we're talking about World Cup qualifying, are we even going to remember this Paraguay friendly or anything that happened within it?
I don't think we're going to necessarily remember the friendly, or anything that happened with it, because there wasn't, you know, we didn't have Tim Weah scoring a goal. We didn't have Andrija Novikovic coming in and, you know, getting a hat trick in his debut and wowing everyone. And he moves on to be, you know, the next American Robert Lewandowski or something weird like that. I don't know. Like it's one of those of like, there wasn't anything memorable, but I think it's good signs moving forward if you're going to take a big picture. I thought the midfield 3 was good. Don't know if this is the midfield 3 that I'd want to start in a World Cup game. Who knows? 4 years from now, it might be. All of them are, I believe, are under the age of 25. That's a very positive thing. You know, you have Weston McKennie, who didn't even feature tonight. So I guess maybe not memorable. I'm going to remember it much after a few years. Cause goodness, I don't even remember half the March friendly, like the March friendly from a year ago. So, you know, I
can't remember who they played in January, to be completely honest.
Yeah, like I can't even remember that game.
Bosnia. It was Bosnia. Bosnia and Herzegovina. It was a 0-0 draw. That's all I remember.
Right. And I think I had to write about it, and I don't even remember watching that game at this point. So, like, it's just one of those of like, March friendlies don't pull off for me. If you're going to take a general takeaway, just positive things from a lot of pieces that are potentially going to be depth options, fringe options, or big pieces moving forward, considering the age that they were. Solid performances all around. Thought it was a decent Paraguay side, despite the experimental feel to them. I thought they still have good players. A lot of those guys are really quality players playing in South America, Mexico, and even into Europe like that. So I don't think you should take the – despite the experimental feel, to the Paraguay side. I don't think you should take the roster that they put out, the players, the quality that they had very lightly. And I think that's a good performance from the U.S. in that thing. But it's more of a building, to me, it's more of a building block. But as for what on earth we would call the U.S. soccer headquarters, have you ever seen the build, like the picture of the building in Chicago?
Like, I have not. I don't know what it looks like. I'm going to Google this.
It's this Victorian castle-y looking thing. That's kind of it just screams North Side Chicago if you look at it. It's gorgeous, but I don't know. I was trying to see if I could find, while we were discussing this, I was trying to see if I could find some like actual like history on the building. I couldn't find anything, but it's this little interesting little just screams like upper North Side Chicago, quaint little Victorian office castle looking thing. I don't know. We could call it the U.S. Soccer Castle. That might be fun.
It does kind of look like a castle. Like it looks like a downtown abbey, like mid-sized, like I don't want to say like a party house or something, but it looks like the Duchess of something like lives there. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, we'll go with the U.S. Soccer Party Castle. We could do that.
Okay, U.S. Soccer Party Castle.
Sounds good. Yeah. Okay. No, but like, I mean, what about you? What are you taking away from this?
If nothing else, we saw a bunch of younger players who are going to have to be significant in the 2022-2026 World Cup cycle all have good performances with their potential future long-term teammates. And then all, like, in short, we got one incremental step closer to hashtag progress, so to speak. You know, I saw some good things out of Cameron Carter-Vickers, better than what I remember from his last time. Matt Miazga looks better than the last time I saw him in a U.S. search. Will Trapp, you know, looked as good with this team as he has been for Columbus Crew SC. Marky Delgado, as I said previously, best game that I've ever seen him play. Darlan Tignagbe, you know, was kind of the old man on this roster, and I thought he had a fairly good game. I was talking to you before we hit the play button, Dan, and, you know, maybe he didn't stand out because some of the other players were a little bit more dynamic, but you look at his stats and you look at his chalkboard on MLSsoccer.com, and it was pretty darn good. So if nothing else, I saw a bunch of individuals indicate that they have made incremental improvements in the last time I looked at them under a microscope in a U.S. men's national team shirt. And eventually, if you get enough of that progress, that means our team's going to be a little bit better for a Gold Cup next year, for possibly a Copa America if the U.S. participates in that, and certainly a little bit better than where they would have been for the last World Cup cycle. So if nothing else, there was just some slight incremental progress. You know, this is now, you know, a footnote that I'm putting in the back of my brain, and this is going to be the reference frame on which I view every single one of these players the next time I see them. Do they make a little bit more progress over the course of the next couple months? You span that over the course of a couple of years or World Cup cycle, like, we're going to have a team that hopefully is going to be competitive in terms of qualifying for Qatar 2022. Moving on, folks, we're going to make this a one-segment podcast since it's just me and Dan. We only had a whole lot of stuff to talk about. Dan, your job for the roundtable is to make sure that I don't completely hijack it into an exclusively El Tráfico propaganda of epic proportions. So first of all, we're going to start with some rapid fire. These are both conveniently in the context of El Tráfico. Listeners, for those of you living under a rock, the LA Galaxy signed Zlatan Ibrahimovic, or shall I say that MLS signed with Zlatan last week. But in any case, on the other side, Andre Horta, I believe from Benfica, Dan, has officially joined LAFC, 21-year-old midfielder, kind of adding to the international flavor, young but talented aura that Bob Bradley is building in Los Angeles. Your thoughts on the signing and what it means for LAFC?
It's nice. I think it'll be interesting to see whether he bumps out someone like Benny Failhaber. He had with Braga, had like just under 20 performances, had a goal and 6 assists for them on loan from Benfica last year. So you know, he is a youth, Portuguese youth international. He's got that pedigree to him. I do think, though, like, I like this signing in the terms of this is where MLS is headed. Is that signings like this? It is a taking these young talented guys at the bigger clubs that can't get first time or that can't get first team time, like Andre Horta. He's not going to start with Benfica. He's just not, considering the players that they have in their roster. He's not going to have that time. Braga's interesting, but you know, you bring him to LAFC and you put him alongside one another future rising stars in Diego Rossi. You have Carlos Vela, who's well-traveled, an experienced veteran, and a good attacking player. You've got other players on that team that are well done. You take him, you put him on that. It's a chance for him to flourish. It's a chance for him to get a chance to own his team. And kind of, I won't say own the team because I don't know what, necessarily whether he'll own it because it still screams Carlos Vela's team to me. But at the same time, this is a chance for him to step onto a much larger stage, you know, because I think you look at Portuguese soccer, it's always a two-horse race. It's always, you know, Porto and Benfica. Right underneath that is Braga and Sporting Lisbon. All the top four teams, but they're those two are another tier. And I feel like Benfica players, think about taking it, just the Portuguese look at it, Benfica fans are going to look at it and be like, oh, cute, he's doing that down in Braga. What happens when he actually comes to our team and we're in the Champions League and we're doing all this stuff? And, you know, is he going to be week in and week out? Is he going to be a Di Maria? What's he going to do? And this is a chance for him to go away from that, kind of start his own thing, do, you know, get a chance to be on his own. This is his team. He's not on loan to this team. So I think it's a good move. It's a direction overall that MLS has been going, has been these younger guys. I'll consider compared to the retirement league type notion that we've had around this league for so long. Younger to that, I'm thinking 27 and young and under, because, you know, you get players from Europe in their prime, still a great thing too. So this is just kind of that next idea, of taking MLS to the next level, is to bring in these young stars and build them up, because, you know, just because he moves to LAFC doesn't mean Portugal is going to entirely drop him off their radar, considering how long they've had him within their system beforehand. So a good move for LAFC, continues with their we're not going old and ancient DP route. We're not going to necessarily look for the most gigantic name, but we're going to look for someone who can come in and fits in with what we want to do, and is kind of looking to get a start on their own. I think LAFC is a good home for him. He's got a good level-headed head coach in Bob Bradley too to help carry that career progression forward for him.
Absolutely, Dan. And then on the other side of it, as I teased a little bit earlier, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, formerly of Manchester United, signed with the LA Galaxy. Reports are it is a 2-year deal entirely with discretionary targeted allocation money for about $3 million. I've written about this a number of times on lastwordonsoccer.com. I've tweeted about it. I had the pleasure of being a guest on the MLS Fantasy Boss podcast that's coming out. They said they're releasing it on Thursday, so whenever it is that you're listening to it now, if it's Thursday, it's already out, talking about Zlatan's impact on El Tráfico and what he could mean, not necessarily for him individually as a fantasy player, but what his introduction, how that changes the LA Galaxy from playing them from an MLS fantasy standpoint. So I won't go too much into those. In short, I think the business side of it, this is absolutely a home run deal. You can get, you know, probably the third biggest brand from a player standpoint in the world right now behind, you know, Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. You move heaven and earth to try and get that player. The fact that the Galaxy did that, not having to spend a transfer fee, not having to spend a designated player spot, only $3 million in money that's going to Zlatan, you know, when he was making, you know, his Manchester United wages at one point would have made, I think we're at $16 million USD. I had to do the math to convert it from British pounds and then also on a weekly rate to an annual rate that would have made him the highest paid player in MLS history by a factor of 2, more than what Giovinco and Kaká got last year at just over $7 million. So getting him under that number, I think, was fantastic. In jersey sales and ticket sales alone, he's going to make so much money for the team, and he's going to make it for the league, for people, fans who just want to show up to try and see him. From an aura standpoint, independent of who he is as a football player, I think that this might be the biggest signing, you know, that the league has made, you know, other than like the Pirlos, the Thierry Henrys, the David Beckhams of, you know, the MLS 2.0 era. From the performance standpoint, I have a very binary feel about what Zlatan's going to bring to the Galaxy. Either he's going to be, you know, like what Didier Drogba was his first year with Montreal, like what Robbie Keane was, but with a larger ego and a more impactful ego, if that makes any sense, and he's going to vault them up to be a contender for MLS Cup in the Western Conference, or all of that good work that the LA Galaxy did in the offseason is going to be completely blown up because now I think Zlatan's coming in and basically expecting that he's LeBron, and if he decides that Siggy Smith has to go, Siggy Smith's just going to leave. So I'm not sure how that's going to work from a locker room standpoint. The only really big international star with a huge ego who Siggy's had to deal with in his MLS tenure has been Clint Dempsey coming in with the Seattle Sounders, but he was an American. He was coming back in. He was going to respect Siggy because of what Siggy had done in American soccer in MLS, and I don't know how I feel about that. So I think, you know, Zlatan could be really good depending on how well he performs and how well he fits into the system, or it could be really, really bad because Zlatan's going to think that he is the system, and he's 38 years old, and he's coming off, you know, back-to-back EPL seasons with a major knee injury that would destroy the careers of mortals in their prime. But of course, you know, Zlatan is our supreme leader and deity, so we have to believe that he's going to be able to come back from that. So I don't know how to think about this, Dan, from the standpoint of, you know, like, either the season's going to end and you're going to say, wow, the Galaxy were a major contender for MLS Cup. I'm not ready to put out the hot takes saying that Zlatan's going to ride them to win the race to save, or like the locker room's going to be burned down. It's going to be worse than last season, and Giovanni Dos Santos's head is going to be mounted on a spike because Zlatan suffers no fools. In any case, guys, with that, let's get to the weekend pick-ems, Dan. We're going to start, of course, on Saturday. This will be at 3 p.m. Eastern on what channel? Is this on? This will be on Fox.
This is Big Boy Fox.
This is Bart Simpson Fox, the first ever iteration. Twitter is calling it El Trafico. My good friends over at LA Galaxy Confidential actually have a poll out whether they're calling it El Trafico, the battle for Los Angeles. Do we want to bring back the title of the Honda Superclásico, even though Honda's not sponsoring it, and part of that was dependent on having the Chivas logo in there. In any case, whatever it is we're calling it, Dan, it's happening at 3 p.m. at the StubHub Center in front of capacity cat crowd. Reports are that the Dos Santos brothers will be healthy and fit. Roman Alessandrini, they're still going to wait to see how he feels on Friday, and Zlatan, paperwork-wise, will be eligible for selection. What happens, and more importantly, the StubHub Center going to be burned to the ground in this barn burner?
I cannot wait for LAFC to just run roughshod over the Galaxy. It's going to be fun. I actually hope, like, that this is just an absolute terrible game. Like, there's a part of me, the Cali Clasico lover inside of me, just wants this to be a terrible game, boring, awful, nobody cares. It's just a disgrace to the game of soccer and what goes on in this game. So sits there and says, you know what, Cali Clasico still is the top rivalry. I hope this never supplants the NorCal SoCal rivalry. Of course, you look at Lakers Clippers, no one really cares about that one. No one really cares about the Ducks and Kings. That's not a super rabid rivalry. You know, what's the rabid rivalry in hockey for the West Coast? It's Sharks Kings. Like, that's the rabid game there in NHL. So I'm hoping this is terrible. No, I'm just kidding. I really do hope this is good. Just considering it's on Big Fox, and that this is a well-played game on both sides. But LAFC's got a lot of quality. I like what they've done. The interesting thing here for me will be the fact that they are coming off a bye week, and teams who have done the bye week, unless the teams with bye weeks have played each other, I do not know if a team who is coming off a bye week has actually gotten a win in MLS this season. So I think that's something to take into account. It's to me that's an intriguing point, something to look at, because you know Toronto FC had that when they came off their bye week from CONCACAF Champions League play. They lost to Montreal. You know, New York Red Bulls lost on after their bye week, or they won their have they had a bye week since their home opener? I can't remember if not, but if they had it like a random midweek, goodness, it's escaping me, a random CCL induced bye week outside of not playing on opening weekend for them. But like, you know, teams coming off bye weeks have not done well. And that's a point that I think, you know, the LA Galaxy might be able to take to their advantage. And for me, I'm actually going to go with a 2-2 draw in this. Just because I do like the offensive output that the Galaxy have. I don't think LAFC have faced a truly hot and impressive attack. And I think LA Galaxy probably have the best attack that they've faced so far. You know, they've faced a toothless Seattle. They've faced the RSL team that struggled after they get wrecked 5-6-1 or whatever that game was. So I'm going to go with a 2-2 draw on this because teams struggle after the bye week so far. And I actually think this is probably one of the better, as much as it pains me to say, this is probably one of the more well-rounded teams that they've played so far in their season, as they've had what feels like 2 weeks off at this point now.
I'm going to put a huge asterisk on what I'm about to say, Dan, dependent on the health of Jonah Dos Santos and Ramon Alessandrini. Obviously, I don't think, you know, Gio Dos Santos or not Gio Dos Santos, I don't know how much he's going to impact the performance of the Galaxy on Saturday. But I can say this now since I recorded the MLS Fantasy Boss podcast earlier and it's coming out later than Last Word SC is. I'm going to stick with the prediction that I had there. I'm going to say it's going to be a 2-2 draw in this one. I think Ramon Alessandrini gets something out of it. I don't know. I think somebody scores off the bench. I think it's either going to be Ola Kamara or Zlatan. I'm not going to throw my hat in the ring for that just yet until I see the starting 11. I think the big thing for me in this game from a defensive standpoint, what has LAFC done really, really good offensively? How did they get the goal in Seattle? How did they put up all the goals that they did against RSL? It was with overlapping runs from the outside coming in, and it was all about gap control. I sent a tweet out, and I'm contemplating writing an article because I'm kind of baffled at everybody's response. Like, everybody just says, oh, the Galaxy's defense is terrible. Not ready to say that it's good by any stretch of the imagination, but you've essentially got five new pieces out of six between the goalkeeper spot and the back four, and then if you want to include, it's a new holding midfielder in Perry Kitchen as well. But, you know, Jorgen Stelvik looks to be the real deal. Rolf Felcher has improved in every single game that he has. We know what we're going to get out of Ashley Cole when he's healthy and fit. You know, that's a question mark just because he's 36 years old. You know, and I agree with some of the criticism that you've put, Dan, that I think David Bingham can be a little bit of adventure. But if all of those guys are sort of average, that team defensively is way better than what they were last year with Clement Diop and Michael Ciani and everything. So the only real question mark is, who do you have in that second center back role? Do you go with the MLS stalwart of Daniel Starris, or do you put the kid in Tomas Hiliarse out of Stanford, or what have you? So that defense is a lot better, and in particular, the fullbacks are very, very intelligent. What Rolf Felcher's done, I think, has been smart, even when he's done a poor job executing. Ashley Cole is not going to be surprised or see anything that he hasn't seen before by a player in the Premier League, in Champions League, in a World Cup, from what he's going to get from LAFC. And that, I think, they're going to be a lot better than what DeMar Phillips did for RSL. I think he single-handedly led to three goals for LAFC. So I think that's going to help stall the LAFC offense. I think what the LA Galaxy are able to do offensively is just going to be so much dependent on who's healthy and who's going to be on the pitch. But I'm going to go with a 2-2 draw on this one. Okay, moving on. This will also be at 3 p.m. Eastern. Probably the only other interesting non-nationally televised game that we have on, folks. Columbus Crew taking on the Vancouver Whitecaps. Dan, Columbus Crew are undefeated still. What do you have going on in this game? And do you think Giassi Zardes will now double up his goal total he had for the Galaxy all of last season?
I'm going to go with... I believe in Giassi Zardes. I believe in Giassi Zardes with an asterisk, only in the correct role in the correct system. Because Giassi Zardes at right back, as we both know, is quite an adventure. So I'm going to go with Columbus on this because when home team always prevails in MLS, we know how that should already swing something in their favor. I really like what I've seen from Columbus all year long. Their back line seems to be a lot more stable than what it was last year. It's not as pendulum swings of Jonathan Mensah either being the best center back in MLS or being the absolute dumbest center back in MLS, which was the pendulum swing that happened quite often last year. So I'm going to go with Columbus on this one. I don't buy Vancouver. I think they're punching above their weight a bit. I think Jordi Reyna is going to be coming off two. I thought he got a red card in his first game with Peru, so he probably didn't play the second. But, you have a couple of guys that they had that are coming off international duty. And so I think that's going to be a little rough for them. I don't think anybody outside of Will Trapp, who went on international duty for the Columbus Crew, but you know they were in North Carolina. And they played a decent game. They'll be fine. They've done midweek doubles before, so I think they'll be fine for that. You know, I don't know. I like I said, I really like what I've seen from Columbus, and they're at home. So for me, I'm going to go with a 3-1 win for Columbus in this one, just because this is not the type. This is not a good matchup. As we talked before, we hit play, as you said. You know, this is not a good matchup for what Vancouver likes to do necessarily, and I think that Columbus is going to take it to them.
Columbus is a good team. Columbus is a good team at home. Columbus is at home. Vancouver is not a good road team. Vancouver will be playing on grass when they're used to playing at turf. I think the one thing that maybe Vancouver will have a little bit of an advantage with in this game, Dan, you know, you look back to the game against the LA Galaxy. Vancouver wants to bunker and counter. They want to press. They want the other team to have the ball. And then Carl Robinson wants his system to then dictate the pace by letting the opponent have the ball and then getting it in advantageous situations with quick turnovers and quick ball movement in the midfield. And you saw just Vancouver get completely frustrated and almost not really knowing what to do last weekend when the Galaxy basically said, we've got a bunch of injuries, we're starting a rookie at center back, here's the ball, you can have it, we're going to defend and try and get a 0-0 draw. And Vancouver, you know, freaked out, they had no idea what they were doing, and guess what? It was a 0-0 draw, and the Galaxy were happy, and the Vancouver Whitecaps fans were sad. So I think maybe the one saving grace in this one is that just by being the road team, playing on a surface they're not as familiar with, and Vancouver playing well, that Columbus is going to have the ball, and then maybe that'll create some more opportunities for Vancouver. Just given that, you know, Will Trapp, who I think has been such a major part of Columbus, you know, behind the scenes and everything, is potentially going to be on short rest for this one. I think it'll be a difficult performance, but a good result for the Columbus Crew. I'm going to say Christian Martinez opens up his MLS account, and I'm going to say Federico Higuain will join the MLS 51 and 51 club on that one, getting the assist, and it'll be a 1-0 deserved win for the Columbus Crew. Moving on, listeners, this will be at 6 p.m. Eastern on MLS Live. We're going to talk about this because Robert Kerr was going to join us, but he has infants, so we had to deal with it. But in any case, Dan, if you had to pick a game from this weekend from two teams desperate for a win playing each other, it would be the Chicago Fire hosting the Portland Timbers. Who wins in this battle of dumpster fires?
The battle of dumpster fires goes to the dumpster fire that actually has a fire in their name. Actually, Minnesota playing in their home opener, playing on turf, is tough. And I think Minnesota is actually a much better team than we all thought they were after the first 60 minutes of the season against the Earthquakes. So I kind of take their loss with a bit of an asterisk. I know Sporting Kansas City's defense was a bit in shambles so far this year, but they still put up 3 in that game. They came back from down 2-0 to win or to go ahead 3-2 in that game. Defensive issues they have. Portland Timbers have virtually no impressive attack outside of individual brilliance here and there from Diego Valeri and Sebastian Blanco. For me, I think that's entirely what their offense is trying to do. I think it'd be interesting to see if they went with a diamond, get two strikers, try and get Adi and Armenteros in there, because I like what Armenteros does when he gets in there. But, you know, they're still rolling with him on the bench and Adi up top, and Adi hasn't looked very good. I think if you go with the diamond midfield, you can at least get Blanco out wide. You can get Valeri underneath two strikers. Armenteros and Adi are two very different strikers as well. I'd like to see Giovanni Savarese make some type of adjustment to his game plan there, and to their overall formation and tactical setup. I think that's the only way they can potentially get a result out of this, because if it's just them continuing to rely on moments of individual brilliance and, you know, hoping that Fernando Adi gets on the end of something, I don't think that's going to work against the Chicago Fire team. I think they're better than what we saw the Mavs. I think Victor Katai is still getting used to things. Bastian Schweinsteiger out of 10 isn't ideal. So, you know, this is a team that you can kind of, I think you should just, with the Fire there at home, Timbers second, continuing on the road. I just feel like I've seen better things from the Fire, in past weeks than I have for Portland. And because they're the home team, it's MLS. I'm going to give them a win on this one. I'm going to go 2-1 to Chicago.
I'm going to say that this is an ugly and completely unwatchable 0-0 draw in this one. Say what you will about the Portland Timbers from, you know, the season so far and, you know, finally getting their first point on the road last weekend in a 1-1 draw with FC Dallas. But they finally got Diego Chara back and he was healthy and he solved a lot of their issues that they had going on defensively. I still think the Fire are working things out in their attack. I think they're going to figure it out. We know what Bastian Schweinsteiger and Nemanja Nikolić are capable of doing. I agree with you, Dan, that I think right now the Portland Timbers offensive tactics is get the ball to Diego Valeri and make sure and let him absolutely save us. I thought that Fernando Audi was checked out. Like, he was daydreaming in the game against Dallas. I think he's already waiting to see what happens in the summer. I would put Armenteros in there if I was Giovanni Savarese and see what he can do. But, you know, I don't think that either team is going to have much of it. I still think they're figuring out these issues. I think this game will be a good exercise for taking a step in the right direction. It's just not going to result in anybody putting the ball in the back of the net. Give me an ugly 0-0 draw. And then finally, one of the more, I'd say, tactically interesting games, and then given where both teams are, Dan, I think a good measuring stick for both in a cross-conference game, this will be an 8 p.m. kickoff on Saturday, San Jose Earthquakes hosting New York City FC on ESPN2. Dan, I'm going to let you take this. What do you see in this game? Because I am fascinated.
I don't see a good matchup for San Jose, honestly. They struggle. This is only going to be their third competitive game of the season so far. This is New York City's fifth, I believe. Fifth or sixth. So I think that's interesting in itself. New York City FC have a lot more repetitions. Valeri Kvasiashvili, though, for the Earthquakes has been on hot form. He's scored in every single game. This season two games so far, so not a whole lot. But he's also scored twice for Georgia, his international team, and scored an absolute banger. Go over to the Quakes Twitter account, see this absolutely ridiculous shot from Vako Kvasiashvili for the Quakes. Stupid right foot outside of the box, top corner, banger against Estonia this morning. My jaw dropped and I replayed it like 10 times afterwards. Amazing goal from him. But that's pretty much all the Earthquakes have going for them at this point. Their back line is kind of interesting. I think they're still working out some kinks with Cummings and Jefferson Quintana. They both have looked decent, but I still worry about some of their positioning at times. Nick Lima has been fantastic. Shea Salinas has been absolutely awful. Got a negative Audi index score in their game against
the negative Audi index score?
That's how many certain things are worth. I don't know exactly what they are because MLS won't give that to us, but the certain things, Nate, actions, like take away points. He had so many negative actions in the game that he actually went negative in his Audi index. So that, Audi index is the Audi index, take it with a grain of salt. But eye test will tell you he was absolutely terrible. In the game against Sporting Kansas City at left back, it'll be interesting to see if they actually give Joel Kweberg an attempt there. He looked decent in their friendly against Lyon and the Landon Donovan return triumphant thing, whatever that they did, moneymaker against in their off week there. This Earthquake scene kind of concerns me because they struggled mightily with what Sporting Kansas City were throwing at them, yet they still created good enough chances that they were able to score. So I think that's one thing that New York City FC will have to pay attention to, because, and especially with their home, they're going to kind of try and take the front foot approach to it. But if New York City FC come in, play the game like they did against Sporting Kansas City in that first game of the year, they come in and just press them and just cause all kinds of issues for them, make them uncomfortable. I don't think this team has the passing options out of the back, and sometimes their midfield worries me a little bit with that. I don't think they're going to step on the Earthquakes so early and get through to them. This New York City FC team is the best team in the league, in my opinion, most complete team with the way that they play and their performances. I know road results are hard, and Earthquakes do have a pretty good home field, but this New York City team's a different animal. San Jose Earthquakes has struggled with the press mightily. I'm going to take New York City in this one. I'm going to take them 2-1. I do think Wondolowski gets another goal closer to the all-time mark, though.
Okay then, Dan. I'm going to put another asterisk on this just depending on where New York City FC is at from a health standpoint. I'm still wringing my fist from the last two games in which David Villa was unable to start in this one. I'm going to say that this one ends up being a 1-1 draw, Dan. Yes, I think New York City FC is a better team. Maybe tactically it's a better matchup for them, but, you know, fine, you know, there aren't many flights in Major League Soccer longer than, you know, JFK or LaGuardia or wherever New York City FC flies out going into, I guess they're flying into San Jose and not SFO.
Yeah, they fly into San Jose International, which is a nice dinky little airport just across the street from Avaya Stadium.
Actually. Okay, so I guess that's convenient. But in any case, you know, I think, you know, that flight and everything, and you know, yes, San Jose hasn't had as many games, but at least they got an exercise. I've been using that word a lot tonight out of the game against León. So I'm going to say this ends up being a 1-1 draw. I'll agree with you, Dan. I think Wando gets a goal in a very, very Wando sense, in which I think he'll probably miss a very easy opportunity early in the game. And then late in the game, he'll, you know, score something spectacular or, you know, be a fox in the box, be right in the right place at exactly the right time. And then, I don't know, give me a Jesus Medina goal on a counterattack standpoint. I think we'll be looking at probably an even game from the standpoint of both teams being content. You know, New York City FC maybe being shorthanded, having to play, you know, all the way across country and saying, okay, you know, we'll take the 1-1 draw on this one. And, you know, San Jose Earthquakes probably thinking, you know, we still have a long way to go before we catch up to a team like New York City FC. We'll take the point. That's totally okay. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, the USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. That does it for everything on our Google Doc, Dan. Last words, where can people find you on the Twitter machine, and do you have any last words?
You can find me, @SpurDan94. My last words have nothing to do with soccer, because baseball is back. Thursday is opening day. I'm so excited for this. The Daniel Matt rivalry continues. We had Colorado Rapids and Sporting Kansas City, two teams that we've adopted in our coverage as, you know, we hope they do well so we get cool experiences, .. that kind of a thing. So, you know, that happened on Saturday. Now we get the first series of the season is Giants-Dodgers, the best rivalry in baseball, in my opinion, a traditional NorCal so-called rivalry. A whole lot of fun. Thursday's opening day for all of your teams. Every single team season starts on Thursday. It's the first time in baseball history in a while. I don't know. They had some stat for it. I forget it. I don't even care at this point. But, check it out. I will actually get to go to an opening weekend game with the Royals. Taking on the lowly White Sox, both the lowly Royals and the lowly White Sox. It's going to be about as entertaining as Portland, Chicago is this weekend, but I am excited to spend my Easter Sunday at a ballpark with a scorebook, scoring a game. So if you love baseball, you know, this is our happy time, as you know, spring training is finally over and we get to jump 2 feet into the season here on Thursday.
Excellent stuff. I didn't have a last word, Dan, but since you brought it up, I guess I now have to ask about this, since, you know, obviously we have the baseball rivalry, we can throw in the hockey ones. I know you're not as much of a hockey guy, but hockey's kind of my equivalent to baseball. We have the various MLS rivalries that we have. Are we including Broncos Chiefs in the Dan Matt Derby, and are we also including Rockies Royals in the Dan Matt Derby?
I would say no, just because I don't cover those teams, and I am a 49ers first, and I assume you're a Rams first guy as well, because nobody likes the Chargers. So, like, it's one of those things of, like, I mean, those are our primary teams, and I root for the Chiefs, and I hope they do well. I don't really care, though, like, about the Chiefs as much. I don't really care about the Royals as much. I mean, it's much better for me when the Royals are bad, because then it's cheap for me to go watch the good teams come to town in good seats. So that's kind of that's my positive thing with the Royals. I digress, of course, these are your last words, but I don't know if I'd consider them in there, because I don't,
okay.
The Royals that much of a, Are the Royals, would you say Royals and Rockies? I don't think they're much that much.
No, because it's AL, NL, they're not even in the same. It only sounds cool because of the alliteration. So, okay, I would throw Broncos Chiefs into the ring for me personally, simply because the new Rapids media guy is actually coming originally from Kansas City and the Chiefs. So, of course, all the Broncos people were giving him a little bit of stick about that. And then I guess the only reason I like it is because Broncos game day, like the entire city is wearing orange. And at that point in autumn, you know, for listeners, you know, who follow me on Twitter and know that my hair is red, there's not a whole lot of autumn-y colors that I can really wear. Orange is one of them, conveniently, so I get to fit in, you know, with the orange crush and being, you know, hashtag United in orange, just, you know, having my Rams shirt underneath. So I guess, you know, they got Ndamukong Suh, so really excited to see what Wade Phillips does with that defense. Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard. You can check out my and Dan's written audio video work at lastwordonsoccer.com. Follow us on the socials. We're at lastwordsc across all media platforms, and you can also email the podcast at lastwordsc@gmail.com. I'm usually the one checking and replying to those. Usually get to it about once every couple of days or so. And you can find us anywhere that you find your podcast. That does it for us, folks. We'll be back sometime next week, hopefully with all four of the guys, talking about more things happening in MLS and much, much more. We will see you then.